I would like to present Holger Metzschulat. He joined in 2012 DT and is an expert in IPv6 and mobile broadband technologies. And between 2015 and 2021, DT enabled dual stack, so IPv4 and IPv6 for their mobile subscribers, and afterwards brought them to an IPv6 only access. And he will tell you the story of how to move your customers from IPv4 to IPv6 in mobile networks. Have fun.
Thank you very much. I have the pleasure to have the first technical talk today. I'll try to be in time. My background is 24 years in telco industry, starting from ATM, WAN networks, mobile networks, IMS, and now my task is more in fixed line access networks. But all these 24 years, I've been accompanied by IPNG, how it was called at that time. Now everybody knows this as IPv6. This is the agenda of my talk. I want to first explain how the network looked like, why we needed to move to IPv6, how the network looks like, how the mobile network looks like, how we can leverage that to move to IPv6. Some technical details, especially everyone who has visited or attended the IPv6 Basics talk yesterday will be able to read and understand the abbreviations in there and some lessons learned. So, quick show of hands, why do you think DT needed to move to IPv6 in the mobile networks? Because of the fancy new IPv6 features, of new products, lack of public IPv4 space or lack of private IPv4 space. Who's for the fancy new features? Obviously, there was one here. Lack of public IPv4 space. And lack of private IPv4 space. Actually, that was balanced, but it was a lack of private IPv4 space. We started with public IPv4 addresses for subscribers. When we started with our mobile broadband offers, we switched the production to private IPv4 addresses, including Net44. At that time, we didn't have enough public IP addresses, and Net44 was a commodity in mobile networks. But then the 10/8 range provided insufficient because there are 16 million addresses, so with some overlap, internal management networks, 16 million addresses are not enough to address all your customer range, even if you are using private IPv4 addresses and Net44 addresses. So we split the 10/8 range up, we used it multiple times, and multiple regions, basically virtualizing our network. The physical network was the same, but you always had an identifier which virtual part of your network you were in. Of course, that's a planning and operational headache to always have a separate identifier separator with the IP addresses. The actual trigger was VoLTE, which started in 2014, before mobile voice was circuit switched. With voice over LTE, we moved to packet switched. Obviously, packet switched needs IP addresses. So we had the options to, again, reuse the IPv4 addresses, drive the virtualization even more, use of squad sways, like unannounced public IPv4 addresses assigned to government authorities, but you get in trouble if they then somehow start announcing or using that. That happens, for example, with the 2/8 network some time ago. Usage of public IPv4 addresses, of course, you can't produce them anymore, or you can't buy them anymore, and to start voice over LTE with IPv6, so that actually we chose to start voice over LTE with IPv6. Sorry, that was backward. I want to go forward. So our general approach to introduce IPv6 in the mobile network and to avoid that proliferation of virtualization of IPv4 space was to start with voice over LTE. Obviously, that was the benefit of that was it was greenfield, so no need for migration, but it was most urgent. Then we went to add IPv6 to the domestic mobile broadband internet access. So you were basically a dual stack, let everything soak, so have a small pause here to see what state we are in. And then we migrated again to remove the IPv4 address of the mobile subscribers wherever feasible in domestic mobile broadband internet. There was a missing D. Apologize for that. We left out roaming, and we left it at IPv4 only. The majority of currently active subscribers is in Germany, so we don't have a big loss of IPv4 address space there. We'll see later why we chose to leave roaming at IPv4 only. And we left a fallback to public IPv4 and dual stack if some subscribers have applications, use cases, whatever, that can't work with IPv6 only or with address translation. So if there is a need and people can't use our IPv6 owner technology, people can still use IPv4 or dual stack. There's a small introduction into how mobile networks do work. In the diagram before, you see there's a radio access network, obviously what you see outside, the mobile towers, and some other equipment out there to get the mobile device into the network. There's a control plane, MME and HSS are some keywords for LTE. There is an SGW that is there for mobility. If subscribers move, they don't get a new IP address, but the network has to track where the subscriber is. And there's actually the packet gateway that takes the, that is the packet anchor. There is your IP address anchored. And from there, your tunnel, there's a tunnel between a mobile device and the PWG packet gateway. And there your packet goes to the internet. So what you see here is your packet always travels home to an anchor point within Germany. 3GPP has standardized IPv6 and mobile networks a while ago in 2G and 3G, GPRS and UMTS. It was added piggybacked on top of existing IPv4 only standards. That is a headache in equipment that was not prepared to do so. They tried to piggyback it on a backwards compatible measure, but sometimes vendors didn't follow that, and there were issues in using that piggybacked. And with 4G, IPv6, and the combination with IPv4 was actually part of the standards from day one, so that was easier. So why is there a challenge in roaming? Although there is a roaming agreement with all these remote networks where our customers can roam into, there's no control over the network infrastructure that they may have. There is a contract that is more or less the technical and financial details and whatever, but there's no contract in what standards the remote network need to support and actually support. The data traffic is sent from the visited network home, so it always is anchored in Germany, but the visited network's data and control infrastructure is still needed. We need the access infrastructure, we need some parts of the control infrastructure, and they need to support IPv6. So if a DT subscriber is roaming outside of the country and wants to use IPv6, the control plane and the data plane of the visited network must support IPv6, although that visited network doesn't even understand or have IPv6 there. So even if you're roaming in a country where there is no IPv6 support for their customers, if you're roaming into that country, you have to have IPv6 support in that country if you're a DT customer. So this can become quite challenging, so we excluded that. So if you're traveling abroad, sorry, no IPv6 at the moment in DT's network, or if you're roaming outside of DT's network. There's a special 3GPP IPv6 link model in order to save network resources, on-air resources, battery resources. There's no Ethernet, no MAC, no neighborship discovery, no duplicate address detection. Effectively, this is a point-to-point link. The LLA, I hope everybody understands what that means, is the link local address of the mobile. This is the first address that the mobile gets, and it's out of the same IP address range. Since it's link local, it can be repeated over and over again, but it's only visible to the adjacent network devices. The link local address of the mobile is assigned by the network. This is uncommon. It's assigned by the network by the outbound mechanism, step one and two below in the diagram. And then afterwards, the single global unique /64 is assigned to the subscriber. So even if you have a single smartphone, yeah, where you probably need only one IP address, every smartphone gets a full /64. So you get 2^64 IP addresses, IPv6 addresses on your mobile, and you are free to use all of them. The network doesn't consume a single IP address out of that. This is conveyed via SLAAC to the subscriber, to the mobile device, and then this can be used there. Router announcements or router solicitations, which are optional. When you you have a modem, you most of the time, and either you have a USB stick you put into your laptop, or there is a chip that is interfacing your smartphone smartphone processor with the broadband with the 3GPP modem or 3GPP part, and there is a modem that needs to represent the IPv6 mobile link to the operating system, to Android or to your operating system that you have. And there's a shim needed because obviously the modem is reports as USB-C communication device class Ethernet, so the operating system thinks it's talking to an Ethernet modem or to an Ethernet interface. But obviously, we have seen there is no Ethernet, no Mac, no nothing. So there is a translation mechanism needed, and that needs to emulate neighborship discovery, response to duplicate address detection, and needs to add and remove the Ethernet header. So if you're tracing on your laptop, on your mobile mobile device, the packets that you see there most often have an Ethernet header. These are not the packets that actually go over the air. There's a translation mechanism in between. One of the other issues is that, as we saw, the link local address is dictated by the network, but Linux and the operating systems try to create their own. So there's a translation needed there as well. So how did we do that, actually transition to our dual stack, so adding an IPv6 address to the customer, but leaving the IPv4 in. Long before we configured our mobiles to ask the network for a dual stack, so even before we started our migration, the mobiles started asking for dual stack, but the network would downgrade that to IPv4, but the customer base is prepared. We acquired a public IPv6 prefix, did a proper IPv6 planning. So you do it only once, that has to last for 20 years. Everybody knows everybody who does IP address planning knows that the address plan that you do once, you can't change afterwards, because migrating an address plan is not simple. Education was key, because you had to talk to many people that operated separate parts of the network, separate services, and IPv6 education was not widespread at that time, so everybody that needs to work in the network needs to be educated about IPv6. So IPv6 is not general knowledge, still not general knowledge with everybody. We added IPv6 to the backbone network, to our backbone provider. Luckily, that was already there, so we could skip that point. Added IPv6 to the mobile packet infrastructure, the control plane, the CE routers, PDN gateways, firewalls, DNS servers, radio servers. Everything that you have there had to talk IPv6, or at least in the control plane. Don't forget the analysis tools. Yeah, IPv6 records suddenly started to show up in analysis tools, accounting systems, and they were not prepared. So even if they don't participate in packet forwarding, in log messages, traces, they will see an IPv6 address, and if they're not prepared for, you will get complaints. So that has to be looked at as well. You can, or you if possible, move your walled garden systems like voicemail, video, self-service portals, IMS, RCS, what have you, to IPv6. You can skip that, because the customers still have the IPv4 addresses, but if you start now, you have it later afterwards. We migrated the subscriber databases in HLR, HHS, but kept the PDN gateway at IPv4 only, and then we started with the rollout, but not immediate. Used in a controlled environment, dedicated APN, in-house at various stages. Don't forget the operations people of the Knife network. They're very helpful and they're interested in that. So we didn't tell them, here's a new technology and you have to start using it now. They were actually participating in these trials as well. Include operations, colleagues, students, device manufacturers, and we also included our boss. Which at sometimes was a point in time we switched off the all these tests, we switched off the test APN but forgot to tell him, so he was very angry. Use automated tests. We had background apps running periodically on test mobiles on those friendly users that were participating, so they were constantly giving us feedback about the state of IPv6 usability when people, these test users, were moving around. Started a friendly user test. We have a Telekom Hilft Labor who's doing all these customer tests, so they helped us acquiring the customer base. inform the technical press. They will discover what you do anyway. So don't try to hide it. They will discover what you do, and if you include them proactively, then you can steer the discussion also by using blogs, social, and so on. People will ask for them, although probably a lot of our customers are not interested in the actual IP technology. There are some technically versed customers that will want to know the details. So talk to them, include them, even if that's not your key business, educating people about IPv6, but sometimes people will ask, and then you can at least steer the discussion in a certain direction. We flipped the IPv4 v6 switch on all PDN gateways one by one, and then we watched the IPv6 usage graphs go up. Now, all our subscribers used IPv6, but we still had, I've had IPv4 as the safety net, so we took a break and let everything soak. If anything breaks, the subscribers will still get IPv4 as a fallback. There is a standard RFC 655. That tells the mobile or the application to fall back to IPv4, and that delay is not noticeable. By proper network monitoring, you can see where the issues are. Now you have the time to fix the IPv6 issues, because IPv4 is still there, missing IPv6 routes in backbones, stuff like that. But unfortunately, no single IPv4 addresses spared so far, so actually we made the network a bit more complex. So now, it becomes a tricky part. We want to remove the IPv4 addresses from the mobile, so we want to roll back IPv4 from as many mobiles as possible in order to stop the proliferation of IPv4 virtualization and probably not get it to zero, but reduce the IPv4 address usage significantly. So legacy IPv4 connectivity will still be required for years, and when I retire, there will still be mobiles out there that use IPv4 only. But that is not the goal, to bring it to zero. But that is also necessary to set the stage with your boss that you will reduce it, but obviously getting it to zero is next to impossible. If you want to get rid of IPv4, you still have to provide the backwards compatibility layer, so still people still need to access IPv4-only services in the internet. So luckily, the mobile ecosystem has developed a good tool set and a good set of standards to access the IPv4 resources with an IPv6-only address. So even if your mobile only has an IPv6 address, you can still reach IPv4 content. These are the RFCs. I don't want to go through all of them, but if you read the presentation later, you can read the standards and see how that translation works. Actually, this is how it's depicted. On the left side is the application on the mobile device. On the right side, there is the internet. And now we have three combinations of how your packets can flow. If your application can do IPv6 and your service on the internet is IPv6, you can use the green path, that means IPv6 to IPv6 native, no translation. There is the blue path, where your application can do IPv6, but the internet service is still IPv4. So there's no translation on the mobile device, but you have a translation at NAT64 in the mobile provider's network. So similar to NAT44 that you are still used to if you have IPv4 only, so that's not an introduction of a first NAT layer. Luckily, all mobile applications are NAT friendly. So, by using the blue path, applications on the mobile that were able to use IPv6 can go to IPv4 and IPv6 services on the internet. There may be applications without IPv6 on the mobile. Then there is a translator in the mobile, it's called CLAT, client-side address translation. So your packet is translated twice, and in the middle, you see there is an IPv4-free mobile transport. This is how it actually works. On top, there is a DNS query, there is a DNS64 in the middle. The DNS64 translator is provided by DT. So on the you ask for a name to IP address mapping. The DNS64 forwards that to the authoritative DNS server. The authoritative DNS server says, OK, my FTP server doesn't have an IPv6 address, but it has an IPv4 address. And the DNS64 server then synthesizes a quad A record, although there is no quad A record for the device. And there is a prefix added to that. This is the 64FF9B prefix, and in the end, you have the hex-encoded IP address of IPv4. So these 8253-something is the hex-encoded IPv4 address of your internet target. And who can tell me why they chose 64FF9B as the well-known standard? I'll spend a coffee at the barista. Why they chose, so if you can explain to me why they chose 64FF9B and not something more rememberable, something that you can easily remember. Then our packet is created. Obviously, the mobile thinks it's talking to an IPv6 target, so it crafts that IPv6 packet, sends it to the network. In the network, there is this NAT64 or provider side address translator, and that changes it to an IPv4 address, and you have bidirectional communication as before, but you're translating from V6 to V4 and vice versa. But then you may say, okay, this DNS server, DNS64, is lying, it's synthesizing IP addresses, so it's basically breaking DNSSEC. So if that happens, and if you want to use DNSSEC, or if you application doesn't use DNS because you enter a plain IPv4 address into your browser, obviously you're bypassing that DNS64. Then an IPv4 packet gets generated on your mobile. It's captured by your client-side address translator, translated to IPv6, and then it looks the same as the native IPv6 packet we had before. That client-side address translator is part of the mobile operating system at some minimum level, so it's not something that you need to install on your mobile. It comes with all standard mobile operating systems. You can even run it on your laptop. There are lots of implementations where you can run this on your laptop. So the transition is the same. It builds on top of IPv4 v6. Now you need to move your services, vault guard services, to IPv6. It's mandatory if your subscriber identification works on subscriber IP addresses. The rest is the same. You have to do the same as before. Enable DNS64 at this time. DNS64 only for IPv6 only subscribers. Don't use it for IPv4 subscribers. Otherwise, you have unnecessary translations. When that is there, testing. Friendly user test, inform the press what you do, try to steer the discussions, get feedback from the social channels, and then change the APN on the devices from dual stack to IPv6 only. And then you can watch the IPv4 usage graphs go down. But wait, change the APN on mobile devices means you have to go to the operating system of the mobile device or to the settings and change the settings there. Obviously, we can't offload that to users. There is no device management, automated device management. So we worked with device manufacturers to make the V6 APN a default APN in all new mobile devices, or we shipped it as part of the regular software upgrades of the mobile devices. Tight cooperation with the mobile device vendors was necessary there. Actually, it ended up in Android source code, and everything that builds on Android source code is using that default APN now. Two caveats: connection attempts from the internet with native IPv6. There is a possibility, IPv6 to IPv6, that you can have bidirectional connection setups, so you can run a service on your mobile device, either intentionally or non-intentionally, but you can get unsolicited packets. These packets, they may drain your battery because they get shipped to the device, but then discarded at the device, but that drains your battery, uses airtime. And they encounter you against your included volume. So even if you're not actively using the internet, those unsolicited packets count against your volume, and you may end up being in rate limiting. So there's an IPv6 firewall in the mobile network that filters out all IP connection attempts from internet to mobile. Even if there is no net in place for v6 to v6, there is this firewall that actively filters that down. There is a tariff option to shut off that or to turn off that firewall for you, and you get, obviously, you need a fixed prefix. You can order that, and then you get a fixed prefix. Otherwise, the prefixes are signed randomly. And another bonus that you need is to tethering, connection sharing Prefix delegation is an option for that, but prefix delegation hasn't made it into the mobile ecosystem. So what they're using is RFC 7278 technology, and that's basically bridging the mobile network interface and your Wi-Fi network. So you get a bridged interface between your uplink interface and your Wi-Fi network, and there is no router in between, no actual router, because packets get bridged from Wi-Fi to a mobile network and back. So we can reuse the /64 that you get assigned from the from the network. The goal reached. We had a significant reduction of private IPv4 addresses. No need to extend the reuse factor, but there is a long tail of old devices still requiring IPv4 addresses. Luckily, no major incidents during and after transition period, so we didn't make it into a target show, and no negative press on Heise. So that was the most successful outcome of that project that last 8 years. But eventually, yeah, the goal was reached. There's a good book that I used through all my work. I'm not selling that book, I'm recommending that book if you want to get more into IPv6 and mobile networks. If you want to use that poll, I would ask, what do we need to push IPv6 development further? If you want to participate in that, because I think the IPv6 usage in the global internet is not sufficient now. Any questions?
Okay, one here. State your name and affiliation.
Peter Hessler from GlobalWays. Towards the end of your talk, you commented on how IPv4 is still being used by services that are only available over IPv4. Have you been able to reach out to some of your larger IPv4 destination networks and discuss with them what their plans are and try to encourage them if they can deploy IPv6 on their front ends?
Yeah, we tried that, and we had lots of students that were researching on that and tried to contact those larger services, but even internally, it's unsuccessful, and reaching out to those, even they have no benefit from that. So that we tried that, but they said, yeah, we will look at this, you will get feedback, and obviously you don't get feedback. And there are so many big and small networks, you can't cope with them. So you have to take that IPv4 will be there also for services for the next 10, 20 years.
Okay, question out of Venulas. 464 XLAT clearly breaks with DNSSEC then, right?
Yes. This is what I said. This is why there is the second option. You run your DNS resolver on your mobile. You bypass the DNS64 in our network. You run the DNSSEC resolver on your side. You get an IP address, and obviously CLUT is involved, as shown here. But that is no issue. It adds another translation on your mobile device. But obviously, that's the only choice that you can do. And if you look at these DNS640 standards, there was a big debate during this standardization, pro and contra this, because yeah, it breaks DNSSEC, and this was highly discussed in the standardization time frame.
One question on the roaming. What's the plan there? Because I'm one of the users which is affected by it not being in Germany a lot. It also affects private APNs, by the way, where the V6 stops working the moment you cross the border. You're going to work on whitelisting countries, or what's the plan there?
Yeah, but for whitelisting, you have to get to those remote networks. And yeah, the same as services ask these networks, can we please shift to IPv6? But we are probably whitelisting that, but currently the project is in the finding phase, how we can best accomplish that, because we don't want to discuss this with 250 mobile subscribers all over the world. Probably pick some big ones in Europe. I don't know, and this is currently being investigated.
So we need to close the queue. If you have further questions, please meet Holger after the talk somewhere outside. Thank you.
Thank you very much.